I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
I want you to know that the mothership has landed.
It's DA on CBS Sports Radio.
What's up, my brother? I want permission to come aboard the mothership.
Asking permission to join a sports talk spaceship? Well, we're all a little crazy. The mothership has connected.
The mothership.
Let's go aboard.
Happy Monday to you, North America. The mothership has connected. Welcome aboard. It's the 3-hour black hole block party. DA with you from the CBS Sports Radio studios in New York City, broadcasting to affiliates nationwide and north of the border. Anchorage to Atlanta, Seattle to St. Pete, Kalamazoo and Waterloo. We are on the air.
Are they listening, D.A.? Everything we saying, D.A., everything.
And we come to you live for the O'Reilly Auto Parts studios. O'Reilly Auto Parts, better parts, better prices every day. How we doing, everybody? Hopefully you had a wonderful weekend. Glad you're with us. Big show for you. We look ahead to tonight's game number 5 in Oakland for the NBA championship, for the NBA finals. Can the Cavaliers actually extend this thing back to the land for game 6? Or is this the night that Cleveland goes down and Golden State claims the championship? We'll discuss that with Sekou Smith, our good friend from NBA TV, coming up here in the third hour of the show. Mike Pereira is a bozo. Sidney Crosby has another cup. And we discuss a huge weekend for the U.S. men's national team in soccer. Also, as you all know, it was a big weekend on the flag football field. Football was in the air. We had a Football Friday last week. Huge matchup between the young guns and the small blocks, Mr. Six versus Mraz. Advantage, young guns. A total team effort, a drubbing of the small blocks. 23-6 was the final score. Only touchdown put up by the small blocks was by Mr. Six on an 80-yard touchdown blast along the near sideline. What an amazing play. We'll hear the play-by-play cuts as we make our way through this morning's show. It was, of course, on Facebook. You can relive all of the magic there. But a big win by the Young Guns, 23-6. Let's begin in Game 5 of the NBA Finals, because as big as that game was, the Long Island Flag Football League, maybe even the NBA Finals tops that. The storylines were obvious on Sunday morning, maybe just as obvious tonight as well. LeBron looking to do what something that nobody has ever done in the NBA Finals, come back from down 3-0. And on top of it, doing it against a team that's already being called maybe the greatest of all time. The question after Game 4, where the Cavaliers shot the lights out, hit a NBA Finals record for three-pointers, and had one of the most devastating offensive performances in the first half ever in the NBA playoffs, 86 points, is the simple question, can they do that again? It's where we begin. It's your cold open.
We have to bring our best game every game against this team. Like I said before, they create so many different problems out on the floor. So much firepower that we always have to play great in order to win. So, you know, we have to do that tomorrow night as well.
They had a 73-win team, and they added a former MVP. We added, you know, Kyle Korver and Deron Williams. They added an MVP to a 73-win team. After being up 3-1, and then KD was up 3-1. You know, the pressure is all on them.
I don't believe it!
The most amazing, sensational, dramatic, heartrending.
It's DA's top story.
Here he goes!
It's your cold open.
That was LeBron and Richard Jefferson talking about the lack of pressure right now on the Cavaliers. And I think that's kind of an interesting talking point. Richard Jefferson saying, we've got no pressure on us. None. It's all on them. They added Kevin Durant to the offseason. We added Kyle Korver and Darren Williams. They won 73 games last year. They've got a MVP that they added to a team that was up 3-1 in the NBA Finals. All of the pressure's on them. And that serves two purposes. Richard Jefferson's been around the block long enough to know what that serves. And that is, number one, allow the Cavaliers to play fast and loose and free. Go, we've got nothing to lose here. Because maybe the idea of defending the championship after last season, maybe the idea of this kind of legacy of LeBron, maybe this idea of the trilogy going up against the Warriors, taking the rubber match, if you will, of this three-year series, became a little too much, a little too weighty for the Cavaliers. And instead, what Richard Jefferson and I'm sure the rest of those guys in that locker room that are leaders are saying is, play fast, play loose. There's nothing to lose here. Let's just go out and ball. Because, I mean, let's face it, we have crushed the Cavaliers enough in the first three games of this series to where they were hearing it. I'm sure the way they lost game three at home, devastating. You know, hearing all the naysayers, hearing people question LeBron's clutchness, hearing people crucify the rest of that team outside of LeBron and Kyrie after the first three games, saying they've got to blow it up, they've got to do something else, they've got to try to add pieces. I'm sure that begins weighing on how well you can do your job. So, number one, Richard Jefferson is saying to his guys, play fast, play loose, play free, because that's the only way we'll be able to win. Okay, cool. The other part of this is a mind game, hoping that it makes the Warriors tight. I don't know if that's going to work, but I think that's now them crossing their fingers, hanging their four-leaf clovers and rabbit's feet, and hoping that maybe because the championship is on the line and they're at home and everyone's talking about them being a historically great team, make them think about that. I think the problem there is that you can't control it. And Steve Kerr's really good at making sure those guys don't get ahead of themselves and those guys don't, I think, let that type of stuff seep in. Maybe with a different coach, I'd feel differently, but I just don't think Steve Kerr is going to allow them to kind of feel this overwhelming pressure to live up to history or anything like that. Can the Cavs do it again? And look, if they shoot like they did on Friday night and they hit 24 three-pointers, yes. The odds of them doing that again are small, infinitesimally small. I don't think they're going to do it again. I think this series ends tonight. I think the NBA Finals are wrapped up. I think the Warriors win in five because you're just not going to get that type of shooting again from the Cavaliers. But look, if they bomb 24 three-pointers again, if they score 86 points in the first half, well, then yeah. Yeah, they could win that. They could win tonight's game. At your cold open, you can hit us up at 855-212-4CBS. Or on Twitter, DA on CBS. I thought it was also interesting that Ty Lue admitted that he didn't like the way that they were playing in the first three games. And I talked about this, and I think this is also on Ty Lue. And Ty Lue said, you know, it wasn't chippy enough. We were showing them too much respect. We were being too nice to them. And he said, finally in game four, we had an edge. And you saw there was more physical. There were more altercations. There were more guys on the floor. And, you know, frankly, it's nice that Ty Lue is identifying that, but that's also his fault. He is the head coach. He played in a chippier era. He's got to be in there saying, don't be nice. Don't overly respect them. Don't go over the top in helping them up or being deferential. You've got to go after them. You've got to attack. You've got to knock them down. You've got to be the bullies. And I said this after game one. I said it after game two. I said it going into game three. And then after game three, I thought the series was over. And that is hard fouls. Tristan Thompson is not there to be some type of great offensive scorer. Tristan Thompson is there to be a rebounder, an interior presence, and a bully. But I don't know if he doesn't have that DNA, but hell, you got to tell Tristan Thompson no easy layups. Make the Warriors uncomfortable. If they're going to slash and kick and move the basketball around and the ball never touches the floor and shoot easy three-pointers, well, yeah, they're going to beat you. They're going to beat you bad. Now, here's the thing. I think people have it in their mind that if you play chippy, if you play physical, then it's like you've got to play the game in the 90s. The Cavaliers show they've got firepower for days if the three-pointer is dropping like they did in Game 4. I'm not saying try to win this game 87-82 because you won't hold the Warriors to 82 points. I am saying if you want to knock them off their rhythm, you've got to be violent. And I'm not talking about get thrown out of the game violent. I'm just saying the Warriors play a kind of beautifully choreographed ballet. They move the ball. They have all of these shooters. They space the floor. They get up and down. If you allow them to race the Grand Prix, you lose. If you put roadblocks or speed bumps or junk in the road, then suddenly you throw them off. Now, they don't have a lot of tough guys in the Cavaliers. I mean, Tristan Thompson plays that interior presence. They have a lot of shooters. They have a lot of old guys. But all of them need to take it upon themselves to say, muck it up, mess it up. Let's take out our frustration here, because if you get the Warriors out of their comfort zone, you give yourself a chance to win. And they did that a lot in Game 4. And finally, Ty Lue is saying this publicly. Yes, this is what we need to do. I think also, man, Steph was terrible in Game 4. Terrible. And it goes to show you how different our expectations of superstars are. LeBron, if he had that game, oh my goodness, the world collapses on itself. Steph has that game. It's like, oh, don't worry, they'll get him in Game 5. Our expectations of those two guys are totally different. I mean, the pressure on those two guys is completely different. LeBron has a bad half. Everybody melts down. Not clutch enough. Didn't make the right pass. Steph is a garbage Game 4, two-time MVP and a unanimous MVP. Barely a peep. Oh, don't worry, they'll get him in Game 5. I mean, look, it'll be a footnote in history if they get him tonight and Steph has 36 points on 13 three-pointers. Yeah, it'll be a footnote. But reactions are totally different on Steph versus LeBron. 855-212-4CBS. Twitter, DA on CBS. After last night, we ask ourselves a question, which I never thought about before last night. Is Sidney Crosby Pittsburgh's greatest athlete ever? DA, CBS Sports Radio. Do you feel the brunch?
Open now for brunch.
The ice cream is in every bite, so it dances with the chocolate cake of it.
Dances. DA on CBS Sports Radio.
It's time to ask the pros, where you, the listener, gets to ask a question brought to you by O'Reilly Auto Parts. Simply check out the link, cbssportsradio.com/askthepros, or tweet your question at CBS Sports Radio. Stop by O'Reilly Auto Parts, where you'll find gift cards and hundreds of great Father's Day gifts, from tools to flashlights. O'Reilly Auto Parts is exactly what Dad wants at guaranteed low prices. O'Reilly Auto parts, better prices every day. Sunday, obviously, a huge sports day. The highlight coming with an enormous postseason win.
I don't think you have to rush like that. You just get some completions, get a few first downs. You need to just get the control of this one.
To Mr. Six. To Mr. Six. Mr. Six hauls it in down the sideline. That's a touchdown. And we've got a 7-6 ball game as Mr. Six delivers on his proclamation of having a huge game in this playoff matchup.
Boy, did Mr. Six just make me eat my words.
Now, that obviously was an enormous moment in Sunday sporting landscape, but that's the only score of the game for the small blocks as the Young Guns roll to victory 23-6. Mr. Six suffering a devastating injury after that 80-yard touchdown reception to crawl to within 1 point early. Later on, suffering what he has called a ruptured Achilles in the game. We still don't have the official reports, waiting on MRIs to come back. But a devastating loss for Mr. Six, and the Young Guns move on. The second biggest sports moment of yesterday, well, maybe the third after the U.S. men's national team, the Pittsburgh Penguins winning their fifth all-time Stanley Cup and going a back-to-back at a belly-to-belly.
Subban with the puck. He will fire in wide to the right of Murray with 5 seconds as the Penguins on their bench start to celebrate for the second straight season. The Pittsburgh Penguins are the Stanley Cup champions. Helmets, sticks, gloves flying everywhere as the Penguins mob Matt Murray. The first back-to-back Stanley Cup champs since the 97 and 98 Detroit Red Wings.
Kenny Albert on Westwood One. Crowd noise was a little different between those two play-by-play cuts. You could, of course, watch and rewatch the entire replay of yesterday's flag football championship on Facebook. It's available now, facebook.com/TheDA Show. You know, when it comes to the Penguins, the question is, right now, is Sidney Crosby already one of the greatest players ever? That was the first back-to-back championship, first repeat champions of the NHL since 97-98, Detroit Red Wings. And that was when the Red Wings were stacking talent before a salary cap. You know, that kind of led to the work stoppage, the lost season, the lost Stanley Cup. And now, in a salary cap era, it is so much more difficult to build a champion that has roots and that has duration and that has, you know, the ability to have a longevity. And the Penguins have been brilliant in this. You know, they win a Stanley Cup 8 years ago, and they have the core, the two superstars in Evgeny Malkin and Sidney Crosby. But since that point in time, really a lot of the roster has turned over. And now, for these two back-to-back, you have guys like Phil Kessel. You have other guys, young guys, stepping up and becoming important parts of the tapestry for the Penguins. And they become a model franchise. I mean, they're a contender every single year. And now they've won three cups for Sidney Crosby. He's won the gold medal in hockey. The guy has been kind of a do-everything guy, the face of hockey for a while now, and the number one pick that was brought in to be the quote-unquote next Gretzky, and he's now one cup away from Wayne Gretzky's total. I mean, it's kind of amazing, but he has done everything. Now, a lot of people don't like him. A lot of people in the league will never respect him the same way Gretzky got respect because of plays like sticking his finger in the ear hole of P.K. Subban and slamming his head off the ice in game five. And, you know, Sidney seems to be a guy that likes to pick a fight but doesn't want to end the fight. And he'll never whining about calls. He'll never have the overall respect that Gretzky does. But it doesn't really matter because he, in the pantheon of great athletes, has delivered on every promise. I talked about this on Friday, that Sidney Crosby kind of was LeBron James in that the expectation of him coming out of juniors, hell, the expectation of him when he was in middle school and high school in Canada was, this guy is next. This guy is the next Gretzky. Now, it's unfair to ever put that on anybody because Wayne Gretzky is Michael Jordan. I mean, you never say that that guy's going to be the next Michael Jordan unless it's Harold Miner and he flames out tremendously, you know? But Crosby has delivered three cups, back-to-back, gold medals, face of the league, you know, he's done it all. And when this was first brought up, I thought it was crazy. But the more that you think about it, the more that it kind of starts making sense. And that is that Sidney Crosby could be the greatest athlete in Pittsburgh sports history, which is a city that has had six Super Bowl championships, maybe the greatest dynasty in NFL history in the 1970s with the Steelers, and a Pirates franchise that has won World Series before. But if you want to list the Mount Rushmore of Pittsburgh athletes, the greatest of all time, I mean, Roberto Clemente's on there. Mario Lemieux's on there. The greatest player out of the Steelers teams to me was Mean Joe Green. He was the greatest at his position than anybody else that they had, although they had all of these Hall of Famers, Franco and Lynn Swann and John Stallworth and Terry Bradshaw and Mel Blunt. But I would say that Mean Joe Green was the greatest at what he did more than the rest of those guys, Ham and Lambert. But that Sidney Crosby is now, at the very least, the most accomplished out of those guys that I'm talking about. I mean, I guess it would be a little different with the guys of the Steelers because they won four Super Bowls. But we don't point to one guy on those Super Bowl teams and say he's the reason. You know, it was all the reason, all of those guys. It took all of those guys to win those 4 and 6 years. And Clemente was great, but obviously left us too soon. Probably Mario Lemieux was before Sidney Crosby, and now you can make the case because he's got 3 cups to Mario's 2 that Sidney Crosby was and is the greatest Pittsburgh athlete ever, which is kind of mind-blowing to say, but the more that I think about it, the more that it's definitely possible. And when you think about where the Penguins were when Mario was drafted, I mean, I know that there was bankruptcy and the issues with Mario having to buy the Penguins and, you know, worried about them relocating, but I kind of feel like if you go back to what the Penguins were in the early 80s when Mario Lemieux gets there versus, you know, having had some stability before then and having won some cups and having been a popular and, you know, profitable franchise before, obviously, the financial woes, that it was kind of heavier lifting, if you will, for Mario. But, I mean, you can make the case, man. You can make the case, which is crazy. Penguins win the Stanley Cup. Gritty, gutty effort on the road last night in Nashville. And I will also say that I thought that both cities acquitted themselves very well, that ratings were way up for the Stanley Cup final. Ratings were up throughout the NHL postseason. And we'll talk about that next hour and more in depth. But Nashville grew up as a tremendous hockey town. Pittsburgh always has been. And you knew that for all of those games, the backdrops were going to be great. Pittsburgh's one of the great sports towns we have in America. Nashville proved that it was a tremendous hockey fan base. And every game was fun and every game was a party and they were totally into it and totally got it. That there was a tremendous, tremendous backdrop for all of those games. And I'll tell you, if you had watched the Stanley Cup Finals or the watched the Stanley Cup Final and then the playoffs in general, last night, you have a scoreless game going into the third period knowing that one goal can win a Stanley Cup. One goal can win a championship. And that high drama, we had just not seen at all in the NBA playoffs. And it was just so delicious to watch last night going, God, you've got the backdrop of this Nashville crowd that's going crazy. You had Catfish on the ice trying to send it to a Game 7. And maybe the greatest player in franchise history, one of the greats maybe of all time in Sidney Crosby, looking for his 3rd cup, and all it's going to take is one goal. One goal can decide this, and a collective arena having a heart attack with every shift. That was tremendous theater last night. When we return, why Mike Pereira is a bozo. DA, CBS Sports Radio.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
Open now for brunch.
Wonderful time slot, although I'm used to having a libation during your show at night. It's been kind of odd drinking coffee to you, but it's been a wonderful, wonderful experience thus far.
DA on CBS Sports Radio.
How many beers ago? Probably 1,000.
Doing More brought to you by The Home Depot, the next generation of home improvement with everything that you need to do projects smarter. The Home Depot, more saving, more doing. Taking a look at a player doing more for his team. How about rookie Aaron Judge? He had a cup of coffee with the Yankees last year. This is his first full-time season. My goodness. The Judge banging the gavel, crushing another 2 home runs yesterday, including one that traveled nearly 500 feet. He hit it to left center. And Aaron Judge clears the fence, clears the bleachers, and hits the concourse behind the bleachers. It was an insane masher job. 21 home runs, and we're only not even midway through June. He's now in a Triple Crown campaign. The Yankees right fielder, who is also, what, he's 6'7"? Is he 6'7 or 6'8"? I mean, he's just a total physical beast, monster. Tops the American League, 21 home runs, 47 RBIs, 344 batting average. The Yankees have scored 8 runs or more for 5 straight games. I mean, they destroyed the Orioles pitching over the weekend. And watching Aaron Judge is ridiculous because you're going, why is this so easy for this guy? I mean, he's obviously 6'7", so that helps when ball, when bat connects with ball, it's going to go far when you're 6'7", and you're built like a freight train. But damn, this guy is insane. Just awesome to watch. Mike Pereira is a bozo. Let's just put that out there right now. Mike Pereira, former head of officiating and now the member of the Fox team. I just think that the former officials have looked bad. I think they've all looked bad. I think they all seem ridiculous in there. And that includes CBS using Mike Carey and other guys. And here's why. Officiating is now in the NFL such a gray area. It's all judgments. I mean, there's really not a lot of hard and fast, everybody agrees, consensus, yes, that's that. We can't even define a catch anymore. So when you have judgments all over the place, different refs judge different things differently. So having a head of officiating in the booth, to me, is not only, I just don't think it's effective, but I also think it's self-defeating. Because that guy in the booth is going to get calls wrong. Because he just doesn't have the same judgment, the same, wherever their line is, he's not going to have the same judgment as the guys in the field. So how many times have you watched a broadcast? I mean, Mike Carey got run out of town basically because he was wrong so much. Mike Carey was a great official. Mike Carey was a great official. But he gets into the booth, and number one, you have to explain. You have to be a broadcaster. You have to enunciate. You know, you have to basically be able to communicate what's happening. So maybe Mike Carey wasn't great there. But the biggest reason was he was always wrong. Now, so on the field, an official can be always right. In the booth, he's always wrong. Because again, there's no hard and fast, this is this, that is that. So I think Mike Pereira comes off as a know-it-all, except he gets them wrong all the time. I mean, honestly, when you watch an NFL game, the odds that the quote-unquote head of officiating or your officiating analyst gets it right is 50-50. Mike Pereira, Mike Carey, whoever it is going to be in that booth and say, no, that's definitely a fumble. I think they're going to call that a fumble. That's definitely a fumble. Then they go, no fumble on the play, incomplete pass, 2nd and 10. You go, why do we have that guy up here? So he can guess along with them guessing on the field? So, yeah, there's some interpretation rules-wise things like, okay, this is what you may miss. This is how the rule is set up. But if you have them there to be right or wrong and you're trusting them, it's totally dumb. You might as well have the broadcaster, the play-by-play guy and the color guy guess, because that's exactly what the head of officiating is doing there. So that's the number one reason. The number two reason is Mike Pereira is now part of this Marvin Lewis nonsense of saying that loosening up of the end zone celebrations is bad for kids. I just, my mind melts when I read these types of comments. Pereira telling the Talk of Fame Network, it's a sad day. It's a step back that we worked on when I was there so hard on to clean up the game and not to send bad signals to young kids playing the game. It's not allowed in college. It's not allowed in high school. It's not allowed in Pop Warner. Now we set the tone as supposedly the idols, and kids are going to watch these acts again. And to me, this is about the team, not the individual. They're going to play to ESPN to see if they can get on the highlights. To me, it's just a real step backward, end of quote. Let's just pause here, take a deep breath, and think about what Mike Pereira is saying. First of all, he's going, these guys are just going to try to get on SportsCenter. Mike, did you miss this conversation in 1982? I mean, That conversation is decades old and dumb and through. No matter what you do in sports, for the last 30 years, guys have been playing to get on highlights. Today, it's not about getting on ESPN. It's about getting on Instagram. It's about getting on Twitter. It's about getting on those on your social media feeds. Nobody's going like, man, I hope I get on the cable highlights tonight. They're going, I hope this gets retweeted 1,000 times. And so whether it's a one-handed catch or a sack dance or a big touchdown, those are the things these guys are looking at, and they've been looking for them forever, forever. I mean, from the day highlights started, guys are like, I hope I get in the highlights. I hope people see me. I hope people see what I did. Like in 2017, my prayer is going, if we allow sack dances or we allow end zone celebrations, guys are just going to be playing to the highlights. Where the hell have you been? Like, where the hell have you been for 30 years? Cable TV started in the late 70s, and we had this conversation. They're just trying to get on SportsCenter. I mean, like, we did this in 1992. This is not a new thing. If we haven't put that genie back in the bottle, you taking away end zone celebrations isn't going to do it. Okay? A generation of athletes aren't going to suddenly go, well, you know what? They're really cutting down an end zone celebration, so I don't want to be on the highlights anymore. It's like, stop. Number two, the kids. This is the one that is the most outrageous. The kids. This is about the kids. So it's totally fine for Mike Pereira to be officiating a game that Joe Mixon is playing in. Totally fine for Greg Hardy to be playing in a game Mike Pereira is officiating in. Totally fine for Ray Rice or Josh Brown to be playing in a game Mike Pereira is officiating in. But if any of those guys have a long end zone dance, then it's about the kids. It's totally fine for Mike Pereira to be officiating a game in Indianapolis where the owner of that team was selling pain medication on the black market with a duffel bag of drugs and a duffel bag of cash and driving around his hometown of Indianapolis totally wasted like Tiger Woods. But that's fine. Mike Pereira will officiate that game. But if an end zone touchdown celebration's too long, it's about being idols to kids. I can't stand how self-unaware the NFL can be on this. Marvin Lewis has employed a never-ending parade of guys that have broken rules, have had criminal activity, have not been role models. And I'm not saying guys don't deserve second chances. I'm not saying you can't come from a really rough part of neighborhoods or a really rough background and make something of yourself and don't deserve that shot. I totally agree with that. But you can't have that backdrop and then just because they have a dance of the end zone going, yeah, but it's about the kids. Yeah, but we can't let the kids see that. Kids are watching every single Sunday when we have erectile dysfunction pills being sold and marketed with buxom blondes on docks at lakes saying, come hither. But that's not about the kids. Not about the kids. We play Monday night football games on the East Coast at 9 p.m. Eastern time so that they get to watch one drive, two drives before they got to go to bed. But that's not about the kids. But man, if you have an end zone celebration, we are teaching the American kids way, way too wrong. Like, you want to know why we might have some issues in this country? Maybe it's because the guys that make up the rules don't realize how they've messed them up already. How they've messed up a generation of kids already. Like, you think end zone celebrations is the worst thing we got going on with what we're teaching our kids? I mean, it's crazy. People walk into office buildings and schools and everywhere else and start shooting up everything. But we're worried about end zone celebrations with the kids. How about all the other stuff kids are dealing with? How about we deal with that stuff first? Like, these people that are hell-bent and hung up on this are missing everything. There's an old adage that says, catching ants, missing the elephants. That is exactly what this is. You're missing the elephants just walking by your door. But let's make sure the end zone celebrations are kind of reined in, because we are showing ourselves to the kids here. We are the idols. I mean, the NFL Network is owned by the NFL. You've got guys like Michael Irvin on there, drugs, prostitutes, partying, everything during his playing career. Fine. Ray Lewis, part of the Monday Night crew. Fine. No big deal. Was part of a murder investigation. Not about that, I guess. Deion Sanders built a career, employed by the NFL, built a career on being about himself. Jewelry, high-stepping, dancing, celebration, prime time, Neon Deion. I mean, the guy could high-step from the 40, his own 40, to the end zone for 60 yards, employed by the NFL Network. But if you dance in the end zone too long, man, we're just setting a bad example for the kids. I just can't believe it. Can't believe it. He also says, you're just not going to see many penalties thrown for celebrations now, unless it's the obvious twerking or shooting of the six guns. Okay, the shooting of the six guns, you don't want to pantomime shooting guns, okay. But the obvious twerking. Oh, so we're still drawing the line at twerking. Because like, well, we have to throw the flag on that. Yes, because twerking in an end zone of a fully clothed football player is the worst thing your kid is seeing. Oh, yeah. I'm sure that's the worst thing he sees. It's amazing. Just amazing. How grotesque some of the stuff the NFL can do at its highest level with the commissioner, with its owners, with its coaches, with its players. And then they go, yeah, but we're trying to set a good example for the kids. No, you're not. You're definitely not. You might pick and choose when you think you are, but you're really ultimately not. 855-212-4CBS, 855-212-4227, Twitter, DA on CBS. Mike Pereira, Bozo. Over the weekend, we know it was an important day. It was an important game. It was obviously one for the ages. But final score, Young Guns 24 and the small block 6. And I got to say, when it push came to shove in yesterday's game, if you were watching, one of the thousands that watched on YouTube, or I should say on Facebook yesterday, you saw the dagger and the Young Guns went for the kill and got it.
That's a lot of gluten.
Very, very impressive to put down 3 real New York bagels. We'll have to double check on that factoid when the game is over. Flood under pressure, rolling right, ooh, makes one man miss, goes into the end zone.
Makes two men miss.
That's a touchdown, and that is going to be the dagger, Pens. They go up now 23-6, and Mr. Six is on the phone, leg elevated, clearly going down and hurting. And you just have to wonder what could have been had Six stayed healthy today. Mr. Six ruptures an Achilles yesterday, at least that's according to his reports. We are still waiting on the MRIs to come back. But the Young Guns move on, and Mraz, I will give you the floor right now. Obviously an impressive performance, not for yourself personally, but certainly for the team. You had 2 drops. You obviously didn't have your best day, your best game, but the rest of your team did, and all the credit to you guys. The Young Guns played a whale of a team game.
Yeah, that's it. We had the game plan. We went through OTAs. We told you we looked like a championship team, and we prevailed yesterday. Perfect defense, perfect offense, and even better special teams, and that's the look. That's what you want, and we're peaking at the right time. A lot of 07 Giants in us right now.
You know, there was only 2 flaws in yesterday's Young Guns performance. Number one, giving up the 80-yard touchdown bomb to Mr. Six. He made you guys look silly. He just ran basically a fly route, and they hit him deep down the sideline, and he just burned your secondary. The second part was you guys led 7-0 driving for the second score, which really, I mean, could have put the game away early looking for the 14-0 lead. You're at the goal line, wide open, ball hits you in the gut, and you drop it. The next play, it's intercepted by Mr. Six, and that's when they go downfield for the bomb. You could have been up 14-0 instead. Because of your drop, it's a 7-6 ball game.
Yeah, and that was a bad sign. I dropped one later in the game, and I came to find out post-game that our quarterback flooded approached our backup tight end, Brian Mando, and told him, be ready. I'm not putting up with more of this. So I was nearly benched on national TV, if you will.
The young guns prevail 24-6, impressive performance all around. And, you know, I think it really opened up the eyes of the Long Island Flag Football League at what the young guns' potential could be. And now it's a long offseason for the small blocks. What happens to Mr. Six? Does he leave in free agency? Does he look to join a super team? A lot of question marks. Will he be healthy enough by the time training camp rolls around? When we return, how did we get that Cavs performance in Game 4 and not before?
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic and conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.